Chapter 11. The Giant. I didn't realize there was something wrong with him until I approached. Even then, I thought my eyes were playing tricks on me. I had to get right on top of him almost until I could believe what I was seeing. Then I had to prove it to myself. I stood by his feet and then walked to his head in normal strides, the way anyone would step at a comfortable pace. I counted off 5 paces before I passed his shoulders. Everyone seems taller when they're standing up, but I knew I should have been able to get through perhaps 2 or 3 steps at most before walking his whole length. I repeated the process a few times to be sure I wasn't crazy. Then I laid down in the dirt next to him. I lined my vision up with his ear as close as I could get, rested a moment on my back, and finally sat up. I could see that my feet ended well before his knees began, and that's when everything else began to fall into place. Ing had told me I would find my brother down at the bottom of the mountain, not long after she'd said I was her son. Now here was the true son of a goddess. I was in the dirt, laying alongside a goddamn giant. I had seen supposed giants before when I was younger. The mummers used to haul them through the cities on the backs of wagons. A lot of times these poor creatures were restrained in shackles, though most of us knew the chains that bound them were made from wood stained in boot black. The shows they put on almost always ended in the giant breaking free of these chains and scaring the living shit out of the children. It was pretty great. The tips they received were enormous. Those giants from my youth were different from the one I encountered on that day, though. I'd seen perhaps 3 of them, 3 that I can remember, and they always had physical ailments to contend with. Their skulls were misshapen, or their spines were bent in some way. I only ever saw one that could actually walk on his own. Most of them had to get around on crutches. They all looked, in fact, like larger versions of me, like men whose bodies had betrayed them. They all looked as though it hurt them to exist and were waiting quietly to die. The man lying next to me on the ground was as attractive as he was terrible. Every aspect of his body was well-formed and proportioned. His head was enormous, but only enormous for me. On him, his head was noble. His brow betrayed a certain sensitivity that was lacking in my own battered face. His nose was straight and his mouth beautiful. I probably would have hated the bastard for being so pretty if he wasn't so damned disturbing. The rest of his body was just as perfect. Good, broad shoulders, narrow waist. Just the right amount of body hair on his chest and stomach without being beastly. Well-muscled legs. His skin was so white, I might almost have mistaken him for an albino, except the hair that covered him was all as black as the children that had surrounded him earlier. I sat there looking at him, thinking that maybe those children weren't children after all. When his chest expanded, sucking a never-ending breath into his lungs. The big bastard appeared to be waking up. I did what any rational man would do. I ran my ass off. I guess he must have been sitting up by the time I dove behind the rock. I'd run back up the trail from which I had emerged, back up to the boulders. I poked my head around the side to watch him. He was up on his knees, then about halfway up to his feet before I realized he'd moved. Never in my life, before or after, had I seen a creature of that size move at that speed. Not even bears, which are meant to grow that large, can move that quickly. He was nothing like the giants I'd ever seen as a child. He was the real thing. A real giant, like they used to tell us about in the stories. A true giant delivered to us from the next world. Then he fell over on his ass. I didn't know what to make of it at the time. But now I think he must have been learning how to move that day. He's always been a rapid learner, though. And later, when we made friends, I had him walking pretty well. But when I watched him from behind that rock, he looked like a newborn foal trying to find his feet, only there was no mother there to nuzzle him and guide him to his first success. He fell over a few more times, moving so damned rapidly every time, I swear. You see something of that size move that fast and it frightens the shit out of you. After the 4th stumble, he must have become frustrated because he hurled a handful of dirt into the air and screamed. You've never heard a sound like that. Or maybe you have, I don't know. Once in the world of Talim, I encountered a beast called a Krogal. They are horrific creatures that live in the bogs and swamps of that world, somewhat of a cross between a snake and a bear. I thought they were baby dragons the first time I encountered them. Sometimes they would let out a growl that you felt rather than heard, this low rumble you could sense like gusts of wind buffeting your chest and passing through your body, and the water surrounding them would shiver off their bodies in shimmering waves. That giant's cry was so much like the growl of the Krogal. I felt it through my feet as I stood there hiding. I jammed my eyes shut and cowered, praying to any of the gods I had once so foolishly ignored to protect me from this monster. Then the cry ceased, and that was even worse. I feared he had somehow sensed me and was creeping in my direction quietly, maybe reviewing in his mind all of the interesting ways to spit and cook a tiny man. I huddled there, terrified like a fucking child, and the giant never came. After a while, I heard something else. Something confusing. It sounded like the sucking, snuffling sounds of a huge beast. Maybe an actual goddamn bear rooting through the guts of some sad, dying creature. The sound continued as I did my best to ignore it. It sounded very wet. Finally, I peeked around the rock to see what he was doing. There he sat, slumped in the dirt on his ass with his legs spread wide and his hands lying limply between them, and he was sobbing like a baby. That was all, just a big damn giant crying his heart out in the middle of nowhere. The thing is, it's rather difficult to stay frightened of a creature that carries on like that, giant or no. I put a hand over my chest to feel my heart and found it rattling away, beating against the breastbone as if it finally had enough and decided to escape. I took one deep breath and then came out from behind the rock. Hey there. Hey, friend, I called. It was probably a mistake. He gasped, rolled onto his hands and knees, and scrambled toward some bushes several strides away. It was very strange to see a creature of that size scurry away on his hands and knees like that. The view wasn't all that wonderful either. Son of a bitch looked like he was smuggling a hog leg and a couple of squash between his thighs. Hey, hang on a minute. Please don't run. He crashed into a bush, flattened most of it, scrambled some more, and finally managed to hide behind the portion that had survived. There he huddled, shivering visibly, with that giant white ass hanging out in plain view. Oh, damn, I said. Where'd he go? I guess. I approached him carefully. Stopped a moment when I saw him shift. It seemed he was trying to get more of himself behind the bush. I tried again. Hey, friend. Shit, can you understand me? Do you understand, friend? Friend? No answer. I don't want to hurt you, okay? Yeah, right. I'd have to drop a church on the fucker just to get his attention. Are you okay? It looks like you scratched the shit out of your flank plowing through that bush. I'll bet that stings, huh? How about, God damn it, I don't know. Are you hungry? Do you want some food? He seemed to freeze when I said that. The nearby forest had gone very silent. Whatever was in there was probably scared half to death from the monster screaming, and I could hear that he'd stopped whimpering. Food? Did you understand that? Are you hungry? Do you want some food? How about it, big guy? Slowly, as slow as honey running uphill, his head came into view. The eyes were red and swollen huge. Yeah, you know what that is, don't you? Food? When he sniffed, it sounded like a tree being pushed over. I'm coming closer, all right. Here's my hands, see? Look at my hands. They're about as big as your thumbs. No way I can hurt you with these, right? They're pathetic. I'm coming, now. Don't you run. Here I come, all right? Don't run, all right? I kept talking like that as I approached, the same way I'd seen stablemasters gentle wild horses. The taming of the beast was never in the whip, they used to say, but in the opening of the hand and in the softness of the tongue. I have no idea if this is true. I'd seen plenty of them lash the soul from the poor brutes as well. But the masters who tamed through speech were never the same as those who brought the lash, and the horses of the former always seemed to me to be superior. However it was, speaking gently seemed to work just fine for the giant. He let me come right alongside him, staring at me the entire time with those wide, hunted eyes. He was hunched over on his hands and knees, and his shoulder blades were on the level with mine. By hell, he sure was one big damned bastard. You sure are one big damned bastard, I said. He did not respond. How about it, friend? Do you know that word? Do you want to be my friend? His eyes were skittish creatures inside that massive skull. They seemed to be as terrified as the rest of him. I leaned to my left to get a better look at his side. There were several bright red lines running along his ribs and back over his hip. They were beginning to weep blood at certain points along his length. I reached out to touch him, and his whole flank twitched like a horse's. I glanced up and saw he was still looking back at me. You poor fuck, I whispered. Are you hungry? I gestured to my mouth as if I were eating. Hungry? He began to chew at the air, and I wondered if that meant he was agreeing with me, or if he was only mimicking. I had already decided I couldn't leave him there, hungry or not. Moving slowly, I found was the way to go. I reached out a hand as if pushing it through fine sand, crossing the distance between us over a period of several seconds, moving always toward his arm. He watched my hand carefully as it came closer, and all I could think of was how large he was and how damned fast he'd moved, and how if he moved that quickly again at that moment, he would probably pound me flat into the dirt without even knowing it. I could feel my ass puckering as I reached. Then I was touching him, and he was definitely not having a fit. I felt pretty good about myself. He just stayed where he was, looking at me, and there I was, still alive. It was a good sign. Apart from its size, his arm just felt like an arm. I don't know why I expected any different. I guess I couldn't believe he was made from the same stuff as me, but it was just flesh, muscle, and bone, the same as I had. The only difference between us was in our vitality. The muscles I had were thin, dehydrated things that pulled along under the skin like dried-out ropes. I had always considered myself to be strong. A life behind the spade can't help but make you strong. But this creature carried strength like I had never seen. His musculature didn't stand out like that of a knight's, but you could both see and feel it there bunching up beneath the skin, masked by sheer size. Just the muscle in his upper arm was easily larger than any normal man's thigh. And when you see something like that, your brain doesn't really know what to do with all that size. It's insane. It doesn't make any sense. You keep telling yourself what you're seeing must not be, that it's impossible, that your eyes are playing tricks on you. I found myself blinking constantly, as if I were drunk and my vision was clouded. The strength of his body seemed to me like the strength of a giant tree. Trees always appear graceful and intricate. They turn and twist as they grow, thrusting from the ground like dancers frozen in time, long sweeping branches held out in space like reaching arms. They seem delicate sometimes, until you place your hand on the trunk and realize that delicate tree is about as solid as granite. I pulled at his arm, very gently at first. After a while, he looked down at the arm I was pulling as if he'd only just noticed what I was doing. It was like trying to pull a tree, in fact. I pulled a little harder, and though his arm still didn't budge, he began to lean in my direction. That's right. Come on, you giant ox. Come away with me and we'll get you fed. I kept pretending to eat for him, wondering all the while how I was going to feed someone his size. My first thought was to get him back to my camp and see how much of the porridge he would take. Slowly, he rose to his feet. He rose, rose some more, kept rising. When he finally stood in front of me, I found myself staring down a face full of cock. I turned toward the mountain and shouted, You couldn't have given him clothes? What is the meaning of this? Doesn't the poor creature deserve to be clothed? What possible purpose does this serve? The giant looked at the mountain as well and shouted a wordless yammer in sympathy. I couldn't look at anything else but that enormous member. It was like squaring off with a mutated horse. You might have at least spared my feelings, I shouted. The giant shouted again in echo. Birds dislodged from the trees nearby and took to the sky, squawking at us like we were assholes. Okay, friend, take it easy now. No need for that. Bless my ass, are you trying to speak? I'll be damned. Come on, friend. You come with me now and we'll see about some breakfast. I took his hand. Well, I tried to take his hand. I got most of a finger. I started to walk but was drawn up short when he only stood there. Come on, big fella. Along with me now. Move those feet. See? Look at my feet. Move them like this. He took a step. That's it. Now the next one. Yes. Yes, excellent. Keep going. You got it now. No stopping you, is there? I saw him smile for the first time then, as we started walking together. I don't think I ever looked at him the same after that. I cut a path due west from our location, tracing the tree line back to the Ruhr. We weren't that far away, and I judged we could make my old camp in short order, most likely less than an hour. I chattered pointlessly at him as we walked to fill the silence. I told myself I did this for him, to keep him calm as we traveled. But this is untrue. I did it to keep myself calm. There was much that was different between that day and the day before. I think at some point I stopped asking questions only because continuing to consider those questions would have driven me insane. I was just accepting everything that came at that point, passively like an animal. I had gone from regularly profaning the gods out of spite to speaking directly with a god, the most beautiful creature I'd ever seen. She was so wonderful I didn't even know how to look at her. I had gone from dismissing the Dwergas as some bullshit story designed to keep people like me in their place to being saved from drowning by them. And now here I was, walking hand in finger with a true giant, a creature quite different from the poor, deformed wretches who had simply been betrayed by bodies that never ceased growing. This man I was walking with now had not grown as he had out of some cruel failing of nature. He was meant to be this large, fulfilling the will of his own godmother in the very act of existing, of walking the grounds of Erda like a king of the forest. And there I was, bringing him home for lunch. I'm telling you, friendly listener, the worlds we pass through are stranger than you can possibly imagine. The conversation was rather one-sided. Every so often he would attempt to repeat what I said. He did better with some words versus others, and he had no trouble at all saying my name. When I finally got him to understand that Udo meant me, I pointed high up at his chest and asked, "What about you?" He shook his head. I've often wondered about that. I am almost certain he could not understand me at the time, not without a lot of hand gestures and play-acting. But there was something in him that seemed to know that a headshake meant no. I've since asked him about that time, but he says he no longer remembers it. "No name?" I asked. "Well, that isn't good. I have to call you something. Friend and impossibly huge bastard seem clumsy somehow. I think... What do you think of Risa? Do you like Risa?" He just looked at me. "Risa," I repeated. I stretched up to touch his chest with my hand. "That's you. Risa."
"Risa."
"That's close. It's softer, though. Risa. See? With a soft S."
"Reese."
"Look at my mouth. Maybe try separating your teeth just a little. Like this, okay?" "Risa."
"Reetha."
No, that's not quite right. You sound like a noble now, or a rich merchant putting on airs. Don't do that. You sound like an asshole. Asshole. Yes, that sound right there. That sound you just made for asshole. Use that sound. Risa, like that. Try it.
Risa.
Yes.
Risa.
Yeah, you have it now, my friend. Excellent.
Risa.
Indeed, that's the one.
Risa, 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 Risa.
All right, knock it the fuck off now.
Risa.
We continued on in silence. I was afraid to get him going again. It seemed as if you could get him going and maybe not be able to stop him once you had. I tried to keep my eyes straight ahead as we went, but of course it was hopeless. I couldn't help stealing glances at him. Parts of him, anyway. He was so big that you couldn't see all of him at once when you stood that close. It was like trying to see an entire mountain when you stood on its side. There was no way. I kept being distracted by his feet. They were easily twice the size of mine, if not more, in both directions. The toes bothered me. I didn't like them. They seemed as long as my fingers, but wider. It was very freakish. I think we'll first have to get the clothing situation addressed. After you're fed, of course. I don't have enough cloth to get you fully covered, but if I can find that barley sack at my old campsite, I think I can open it up and at least get your most disturbing parts covered before I try to take you home. I can't just take you back there like this. The womenfolk are likely to run screaming, though whether they run toward you or away from you, I can't really say. It seems a needless complication, though, to be avoided if possible. Risa grunted, and I supposed it meant he agreed. I found Ambrosius guarding what was left of the camp, as I knew he would be. There he was, lying by the cart, under a tree. As we approached, he struggled up from the ground, farting heroically in the process, and trotted over to nuzzle against my side. He prodded at me like an old dog, and I stroked at his muzzle until he relaxed, saying many nice things to him, and thanked him for guarding the site. Sarcastically, really. The entire area had been demolished. Ambrosius approached Risa as I stepped away, sniffing at his legs curiously, and the giant laughed at the touch of his snout. I paid no attention to this. I had eyes only for the destruction around us. Everything was destroyed. The handles of all my tools had been broken into splinters. Any of the clay I'd managed to collect was gone, presumably returned to the Ruhr. The foodstuffs were strewn across the dirt, though I found the old grain sack nearby. It had a long tear across its length, but looked like it would still serve as a loincloth for Risa. There were shards of pottery strewn about in the dirt. Everything else was a complete loss. Even the goddamned lantern had been shattered.
Cock-sucking dwergas,
I spat. I flew into a rage. It was the last thing I needed, the destruction of my belongings. My funds had been exhausted, not through my own debauchery, as was right and proper, but through a series of unavoidable events timed so perfectly I could almost suspect them of being planned. Now here I was, staring at the afterbirth of my own undoing. It went beyond my ability to drink my mind silent, beyond my ability to feed myself or to get laid. I'd been robbed of my ability to earn. You need tools to dig. You can't just get down in the soil with your fingers and teeth. You need a pick to chip through the hardest, most stubborn dirt. There must be a spade to move large quantities of dirt out of the way. When there were thick roots to cut through, you could not beat a mallet and chisel. The chisel itself being very large, of course, with a blade about as long and wide as a man's hand. Even my goddamn chisel had been destroyed, snapped down the middle of the handle's shaft as if it were a twig. I bounced what was left of the chisel in my hand, wondering if I could still drive it without the mallet head chipping and shattering what was left of the handle. I threw the chisel head at the mountain and screamed, "This was necessary! You couldn't just leave me this! Fuck you! Fuck all of you to death!" Then I went to work, finishing what they'd started. I overturned my cart and began bashing at the axle with what was left of my mallet. I picked up the bits and busted pieces of my tools and cast them into the roar, never mind the fact that the steel heads were all still good. The pick, the spade, the mallet. The digging bar was actually in perfect condition. Being made only of steel, I supposed it was too much for the Dwergaz to break in half. I threw it in along with everything else, not paying attention or caring anymore. They had kicked the rocks from my campfire aside, but I searched them all out and tossed them in as well. After I'd thrown in all the easy things, I scurried to the cart and grabbed one side to tip it back onto its wheels. I had failed to destroy the axle with my little stub of a mallet. It was either heavier than I remembered, or I was overtired from my tantrum, I don't know. What I do know is the damned thing resisted my attempts to set it right. Risa, come give me a hand with this, okay? I spun around, wedged my back into the sidewall, and shoved through the legs. It began to lift, but then just dropped as it slid away from me. Fucking damn it, damn it! Damn the gods, damn Erida and fucking Godin as he rides her. Damn this fucking cart and the dirt beneath its timbers. Damn the fucking Dwergaz and the rocks they eat. Damn this fucking world, and damn me too, Risa! I realized I hadn't heard him for a while. I stood and turned a half circle until I saw him. Risa? He was sitting in the dirt again like a monstrous baby. In his hand were two shards of what appeared to be my old lard pot. His face was contorted under his own concentration, and he repeatedly pressed the shards together. He would hold them like that and begin to bob his head. After he'd bobbed his head a while, he would let go of one side and watch as it fell back to the ground. I watched him go through this process two more times before I realized he was trying to put the pot back together. Then I understood that when he was bobbing his head, he was actually counting. Risa. Hey, chap. Are you okay? He looked at me then, and I saw he was crying. Thick runners of tears like rivers glistened over his cheeks. His hands continued to press the shards together as if the action was automatic and required no thought. Oh, damn, Risa. Hey, it's all right. I walked over and knelt down next to him in the dirt. It's okay, Chappie. Stop that. Here, just give those to me. I took the shards away from him and watched his enormous hands drop into his lap. I watched him very closely, and I can say with certainty that at this point, the man hitched a deep sigh and his chin quivered. Then, and I swear by the great mother who sustains us all, he said,
"Sorry."
Come again?
"Sorry."
Risa?
"Sorry. Sorry. Udo. Sorry. Risa. Sorry. Sorry. Sorry, Udo."
He hung his head and would say no more. "Oh, man," I said. I had no idea what to do. It might have been the most pathetic thing I'd ever seen, and I grew up in Colmar. I was at a total loss, and deciding things couldn't get any more ludicrous, I took one of his hands in both of mine. It was like holding onto a sow's ass, the damn thing was so big. The great oaf just rested it on my thigh, and I figured I had about a minute before my whole leg lost all of its feeling, and here was this mountainous idiot next to me, about as swift as a frozen wad of shit. I stroked the back of his hand over and over again, slowly, until he stopped hitching. "This wasn't your fault, Risa. This was my fault. No, you be quiet a while. You stop making noise until you're okay again. You just breathe for me, okay? Breathe. In and out. That's a boy. Calm down for me. Can you do that? There you go. There it is. Good. That's good. That's a boy, Risa. That's my boy." He'd settled down, so I got back up, ripped a swatch from my shirt, stood within the valley of his legs, and began to clean his face off. He was so big that I didn't have to bend down to do it. His face was right on the level with mine when he sat on his ass. I kept talking as I rubbed the grime away. This one was my fault all the way. You understand that? We're not supposed to dig. We all know it. I know it. I can't really explain what happened out here. I knew I was going too deep. I didn't care, though. I think you go your whole life being terrified of a thing, but you can only keep that up for so long. It's impossible to be scared forever, especially when you never see the thing that's supposed to come get you. After a while, you start to feel duped. Do you know what that means, Risa? Duped? It means someone got the best of you, see? You can't allow that, okay? Never forget that. You must never allow yourself to be duped. You're done as soon as it happens. You put your guard down, and the worst possible people convince you they're your friends, or worse, your protectors. If you're grown and strong, they probably just rob you, maybe stab you a bit, which I guess isn't the worst thing in Erda. If you're strong, though, say if they're much bigger than you, or perhaps say you're much smaller, can't fucking defend yourself, they'll take more than money, eh? They'll take your soul, Risa. They'll take it a piece at a time, one violent act at a time, one shameful act at a time. They'll hold you down, make you helpless, and they'll take it all from you, a piece at a time. Do you understand me? He only looked at me. He'd long since stopped sobbing, and now his eyes were only very wide, very solemn. He looked at me as if I were a priest delivering to him a blessing from one of the High Nine, which was absurd. He had been delivered to the world by Ing, as far as I could tell. And if that's not the highest blessing one could receive, then I don't know how any of this works at all. Say it, Risa. Say, duped.
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 Excellent. Say, no duped.
No duped.
That's right, I nodded. I smoothed his hair back and smiled. He nodded back at me and smiled as well. One of those impossible fists came up from his lap, drew near to my face. It could have swallowed my whole head within its palm and crushed my brains to jelly, but the backs of the fingers only brushed my forehead, then my cheek. To this day, I don't know what I thought about that. I didn't like how it made me feel. I didn't like that the way it made me feel seemed like it should have been normal. I didn't know what to say at all, so I said, "Quite uglier than yours, eh?" He was confused and began to touch at his own face, but I pulled his hand away. "Forget it. Once we get a few things under control, I'll put out a bowl of water so you can see your reflection. You'll see. Now, are we good?" I nodded as I said this, so when he nodded back, I couldn't tell if he understood my question or if he was just mimicking me again. "Well, great," I said. "Let's get that thundercock of yours covered up before we take you back to town, yeah? Some of the husbands out that way are liable to open their wrists in a fit of despair."